And welcome everyone to Human Resource Management, final lecture for trimester 1, 2020. This is your review lecture, so do pay attention as it's got some good gems in this lecture to help you with your preparation for your exam. So, as with the other recordings, this is intended to be viewed alongside the PowerPoint slides. So, do pull up your PowerPoint slides and take relevant notes as we go through. Okay, so what I'm going to do is give you a little bit of an overview or review of main areas that I think would be helpful for you to know. And I'll give you a few exam tips as we go through. So, just some thoughts to begin with. Study what you need to study. So, think of the areas that you might not really know too well that you might need to study up on. Focus on those areas. Don't spend too much time on things that you already know. Focus on the things that you don't know. But I would very much focus on the areas that I highlight for you as areas to focus on for this particular exam. So remember, nothing should be studied in isolation, that everything fits together. And the one of the underlying things that we've talked about is that we need to be thinking strategically. With human resource planning, and so we need everything that we do must support the organization's overall plans. Think about your own experience and observations as well, and think of ways in which you can include examples. Now, the exam is going to be structured in two sections. There's going to be a section A and a section B. The section A is really just asking you to think of specific concepts and relate it to human resource management and to give an example. And so that's section A. So, for example, I might say indirect discrimination. And so you sort of think, okay, indirect discrimination, what's its relevance to human resource management? And what might be an example? How might I be able to show this would be applied? So you'd give an example of what you'd define it. What is indirect discrimination? And you'd give an example. I'll talk more about Section A when we get to it. Okay. So what is human resource management? Well, obviously, we've been looking at that for the past trimester, so hopefully you've got a bit of an idea of what it is by now. It's the focus on managing people within the employer-employee relationship, and one of the definitions in our textbooks is the productive use of people in achieving the organization's objectives and also satisfying individual employee needs. So it's not only just using people to satisfy what the organization needs, but it's also considering the individual. You should have a good overview of the different human resource management activities or functions by now. And so there's a couple of slides here just showing what they are. So job analysis, planning, recruitment, selection. You should go into the exam knowing what job analysis is. You should have a good distinction between what recruitment and selection is because they are different concepts. Recruitment is attracting a suitable pool of applicants, which might be successful if hired, and the selection is actually making that selection decision. Performance appraisal, that's obviously to do with managing the performance of individuals. So understand what that is and maybe have an example of how you could describe that process. People usually get together for a formal appraisal meeting and plan goals together. And they are reviewed and evaluated. Human resource development and career planning and development. There are a couple of other activities. Managing diversity, such as making sure that we're not discriminating against people and that we're making sure that we've got a diverse workforce. Our health and safety initiatives and programs, and we particularly focused on sections 19 and 20 of the Occ Health and Safety Act 1984. And I'd strongly encourage you to make sure that you have a good understanding of those duties for employers and employees. Sections 19 and 20 of the Occ Health and Safety Act. Have a look at your slides before going in the exam. There's a good chance you might be asked a question with regards to this, the duties of employees and employers. We also have motivating employees is one of the things that we do in human resource management. Try and reward people, compensate people through money and benefits. And one of the concepts that we've talked about in that is called total remuneration, monetary and non-monetary remuneration. And so I would go into the exam making sure that I've got a good understanding, particularly of what total remuneration is. Employee relations. So we've talked a little bit about the Fair Work Act. It's one of the pieces of legislation that have come out that underpinned our industrial relations system here in Australia. And so that's part of what human resource managers do, is they manage the employee relations or industrial relations for the organisation. So I've listed 10 things on this slide. This is the slide that says, understand this. These are 10 things that I would encourage you all to make sure as part of your preparation for the exam that you study these 10 areas. So the National Employment Standards, there is a Fair Work Information Sheet, which you can just download off the internet, Fair Work Information Sheet, and it tells you about these National Employment Standards. But I've also got some slides here, and there are also on some slides that we've looked at during the unit, what those National Employment Standards are. Make sure you go into the exam being able to just not only list them, there's 10 of them in total, you know, what are the National Employment Standards, but also to be able to knowledgeably talk about what they are, their relevance to human resource management. So as a human resource manager, you need to know that people, a full-time working week would be 38 hours. One of the standards is that is what the number of hours is, or 37 and a half it might have come down to now. And another one is how much leave people are entitled to. So that's the relevance of that. Total remuneration, I've already given you a hint already. Make sure you know what total remuneration is, which incorporates both monetary and non-monetary remuneration. Know what internal recruitment is and external recruitment. What's the difference between the two? And give examples of what external recruitment methods you could use and some internal recruitment methods you could use. I've already given you a strong hint that Occ Health and Safety Duties is an area to focus on for the exam. Sections 19 and 20 of the Occupational Health and Safety Act. They are the duties of employers and employees. So you need to make sure that you understand that employers have a responsibility to provide a working environment in which its employees are not exposed to hazards. And as employees, you've got to do everything that's reasonably practical to ensure your own safety and health and the health and safety of others in the workplace. So make sure you've got a good understanding of that before you go into the exam. Similarly, performance appraisals, understand what a performance appraisal is, and you can knowledgeably talk about that. Discrimination, we've already talked about that briefly. What is discrimination? What are some of the grounds for discrimination? What's the difference between direct discrimination and indirect discrimination? So direct discrimination is where you might put an ad out and say females wanted to apply for this hairdressing role. Well, that's directly discriminating against men. Indirect discrimination might be where you say wanted someone who can work in our bar must be able to fit a size 12 outfit or smaller. And so again, that is discrimination because there'd be a greater proportion of females that would be able to fit into a size 12 costume or smaller than men. So you've got to be careful that you're not directly discriminating against people or indirectly discriminating against people. Job analysis. We've talked about job analysis a lot in our unit, and I've emphasised its importance of understanding what it is. So you will get a question. This is actually going to come up in the section B, which is the longer answers, so that you can describe what job analysis is and its relevance to human resource management. And one of the main things to remember about job analysis is that just about everything we do in human resource management comes out of an understanding of the job and also the what a person needs to be able to do that job, which are the two main elements that come out of job analysis. And they flow into an understanding of recruitment, selection, induction, training, performance appraisal, and more. There will be a question in the exam that will test your understanding of selection. So have a good understanding of selection in terms of a typical selection process, and also some selection techniques. So by techniques, you might have interviews, tests, different types of tests, use some written applications and so forth. What are the techniques you're going to use to select people? And related to that is having a good understanding of what reliability is and validity. Remember, reliability is to do with consistency over time, and validity is it valid? Does it actually measure what it's supposed to measure? And finally, career planning and development. I'll give you a bit of a hint. This career planning and development's not coming up in the main exam, if you're going to sit the main exam, but if you are going to sit the deferred exam for any reason, it will be coming up in the deferred exam. So if that's you, that you're sitting the deferred exam, make sure you study career planning and development before going into that. If you're studying the main exam during the normal exam period, don't worry about studying for career planning and development too much. There won't be a specific question on it. You still might be able to draw it in answering another question, such as, you know, how does job analysis fit in with the functions of human resource management? You might be able to then bring in career planning and development as one of the functions. But there won't be a specific question in the main exam on career planning and development, but there would be a question in the deferred exam if that's you. Okay. Human resource planning. And just have a bit of a think. What stage your organisation is going through? Is it going through a period of growth, decline? Is it diversifying? And make sure that your human resource planning is in alignment with short, medium, and long-term goals of the organisation and what sort of stage it's going through. So human resource planning is the process of systematically reviewing human resource requirements to ensure the right number of people with the right and required knowledge, with the right skills, abilities, etc. Okay, so there's just a diagram here that's showing a retrenchment strategy, a stability strategy, a growth strategy, and depending on if your organisation is, say, downsizing or going through a period of growth, you're obviously going to have to match your employee needs with that. So if you're being affected by COVID-19 and your organisation's going into shutdown, you might need to downsize, have a retrenchment strategy. Or maybe you're an organisation that provides medical supplies, and instead of having a retrenchment strategy, you'll need a growth strategy where you need to employ more people. And so this is where organisational planning that matches the organisational strategy comes into play. Now, one of the things we talked about in our unit is the legal framework, and you've got a slide here that summarises a number of the different things here. We're not going to be testing you in the exam on all of these areas, but we are going to focus in on a couple of areas. And for example, we're going to focus on discrimination within the Equal Employment Opportunity Act. We're also going to be focusing on sections 19 and 20 of the Occupational Health and Safety Act 1984. So a couple of areas there to focus in on. And hopefully you've been able to just gain a good overall knowledge of the legal framework to help you in your HR careers as well. So here's an example of an exam question. Why is an understanding of the occupational health and safety duties for employers and employees, section 19 and 20 of the Act, relevant to human resource management practitioners and employees? So if you can go into the exam with the ability to answer that question, I think you should be able to answer the question in the coming exam. Similarly, you'll be invited to demonstrate your knowledge of the National Employment Standards. So make sure that you know what the 10 employment National Employment Standards are. And if we go on to the next couple of slides, you can see them summarised here. Flexible working arrangements, minimum of 38 hours a week, 4 weeks paid annual leave, 10 days carer's leave, 52 weeks unpaid parental leave, community service leave, long service leave, public holidays, notice of termination and redundancy pay, and people need to actually receive the Fair Work Information Statement. You can go online and get a copy of the Fair Work Information Statement. Just Google Fair Work Information Statement and it'll come up. So here's an example of an exam question that could be something along these lines. What are the National Employment Standards and explain their relevance to human resource management? Now, I've mentioned earlier that discrimination is something that's going to come up. And so there's two types of discrimination, direct discrimination, indirect discrimination. Make sure that you've got the ability to knowledgeably discuss both direct and indirect discrimination and to be able to give examples. So discrimination is likely to come up for you in the essay section of the exam. Remember, there's two sections of the exam. The first part is short answer and the second one is essays. And I'll talk more about that in a moment, but the discrimination question is likely to come up in that second bit. So direct discrimination refers to any bias towards a person based on characteristics or grounds such as age, sex, race, marital status, pregnancy, etc. Often it comes about because of stereotypes we have about particular groupings of people. Men are like this, or women are like that, or people from this particular country are like that. You know, they're stereotypes. And indirect discrimination occurs where a neutral aspect provides adverse outcomes for people. So the example I gave before, direct discrimination might be where you might be specifically saying, I want a girl or a female to work for me. That's discriminating against males. And indirect is where you actually do something that you might not directly be saying, I want a girl or I want a male or whatever, but just by implication, you've indirectly discriminated against the person. So if you were to have a look at the Act more closely, you would find that there are a number of grounds. And so here are a number of grounds that are contained within the Equal Employment Opportunity Act. And so you're not to discriminate either directly or indirectly on any of these grounds. So the relevance for us as human resource managers is we've got to be careful in our recruitment advertising, we've got to be careful in our promotions, we've got to be careful on who we select for training and those sorts of opportunities. We've got to be careful on who we select to join certain committees even. We've got to make sure that we are not discriminating. So here's a typical exam question. A typical exam question will draw out your understanding of both direct and indirect discrimination. It'll try and draw out your knowledge for the grounds of discrimination. So the grounds for discrimination are all those things such as sex, race, disability, marital status, pregnancy, religious beliefs, career status, age, sexual preference, etc. And it will also ask you to think about how you as a human resource practitioner can ensure you don't discriminate against people. So they're the typical sorts of things that an exam question will try and draw out of you. So start thinking about that prior to the exam. How can you go beyond just meeting your legal obligations with regards to discrimination? So can you actually put in place certain programs? Can you actually have a culture within your organization, for example? What can you do to promote a strong culture within your organization that supports an atmosphere of cooperation, of not having any form of discrimination in the workplace at all? Okay, so total remuneration. Make sure you know what it is. It's really monetary remuneration, such as your salary, plus non-monetary remuneration. Okay, so here are some examples of monetary remuneration, something that you can actually put a dollar value to. So salary, bonuses, cash incentives, commission, profit sharing, their direct payments. And you can also have indirect payments such as giving people holidays, paid holidays, a parking space, paying for their medical insurance, superannuation contributions, even giving them a car or a phone. That can be all packaged up and given a dollar value, and that's monetary remuneration. But there's the non-monetary side to remuneration as well. And so there can be job conditions that people value, such as status or promotion or career development or being empowered, authority. They're related to the job conditions, but also the work conditions, such as discrimination or equal employment opportunity, how things are structured, policy and procedures, security, being treated fairly, one's span of control or how many people you've got reporting to you, the collegiality or the way you all get on well in a workplace. These are all part of the work conditions, and they can actually form part of remuneration as well, total remuneration. This is the non-monetary side of the reward we get. So when you discuss total remuneration in your exam, make sure that you talk about both monetary and non-monetary remuneration, because the two of them together are total remuneration. So a typical exam question might be something like, drawing upon examples, discuss what total remuneration is. What is the relevance of understanding this concept to human resource practitioners? If you could answer this question before going into the exam, I think you should have a very good chance of being able to answer the exam question on total remuneration in the coming exam. Okay, make sure you know what job analysis is. There's two aspects of it. One side is looking at the tasks, duties, and responsibilities of a job. And the second one is looking at the knowledge, skills, abilities, competencies, etc. a person needs to be able to perform that job. So think of the two aspects. Remember, you get the job description out of it. You also get the person specification out of it. So the uses of job analysis, you've got the job description, you've got the job, I often call that the person specification because it describes the person. So the job description describes the job, what the purpose is, the duties, the role, the responsibilities, the conditions under which it's performed, etc. And the person specification or job specification are the qualifications, knowledge, skills, abilities, personal characteristics, attributes, competencies, skills, all those sorts of things that describe the person. And the process of job design is actually putting together the job description in the first place and designing how it's all going to fit together, the job. So that's the process of job design. Now, this is where you're going to probably have to start thinking about your exam question. Okay, it's more than just explaining what job analysis is. I expect you all to know what job analysis is going into the exam, and you've got to obviously tell me what it is. But think about how job analysis links to the various functions of human resource management. So you need to be able to understand the jobs and what a person needs to be able to perform those jobs in terms of skills, knowledge, abilities, etc., to help you with your planning. You need to know what the job is to then be able to get involved in recruitment, putting together your job adverts. You need to understand the job and what you're looking for in the person. Similarly, you need to understand the job and what you're looking for in the person when you're selecting someone. You need to understand the role that people are going to work in to properly induct and orient them. You need to understand the roles and what people need to be able to do the roles to train and develop them. And to advance them in their careers. If you're appraising someone, you need to understand their job and what they're supposed to be able to have in terms of competencies and skills and knowledge to be able to properly appraise them. And you need to understand the scope of someone's job to be able to reward them appropriately for it. And you might require them to have high-level skills and qualifications and those sorts of things to perform that job, and so you've got to make sure that you reward people. So you can see how job analysis fits in with various functions. You need to be able to tell us that in the exam, link it to the various functions. Attracting applicants. So we're now talking about recruitment. Remember, recruitment, attraction, interchangeable terms. What I want you to do is I want you to think of both internal and external methods for recruiting people. Okay, so let's go on to the next slide, pros and cons. Make sure you've got a good understanding of different internal and external methods and the advantages and disadvantages of both internal and external methods. So some internal recruitment methods might be directing someone, making a direct appointment or promotion from within the organisation, from your existing employees. You might transfer laterally someone from a position at the same level, a sideways move, that's a lateral transfer. You might advertise internally through memos, emails, your intranet, notice board. What are some of the ways you might do that internally? And then think about different ways of recruiting people externally. And so if you're looking for someone for an unskilled position, using something like Skype might be the way to go. But if you're trying to get an accountant, you might want to have a look at, say, some of the online professional journals that they look at. So target your external methods of recruitment according to the different professional or working group that you're targeting. A typical exam question in the area. Drawing upon examples, discuss a range of internal and external recruitment methods and the pros and cons of using them. That's an example question that we have used in the past. So there is a question in the exam that's going to look at the selection process. And so an initial part of the selection process is conducting your initial screening and shortlisting. So make sure you have a bit of an understanding of that. Make sure you go into the exam in your ability to answer any question on selection, that you know a range of different selection devices. And by that, I'm not just talking about the interview, I'm talking about different types of interviews. And we've talked a bit about the semi-structured interview and how a semi-structured interview based on the selection criteria with lots of behaviorally based questions, open questions rather than closed questions, you know, these are all good things to do. And so think of how you might use interviews, think how you might use the written application, think how you might use medical examinations, think how you might use practical tests, think how you might use psychological tests. Make sure you know a range of selection devices as well, and we've talked about these within the unit. Remember, all selection devices suffer to some extent in terms of validity, their ability to measure what they're supposed to measure. So identify some of the problems associated with them, and you can talk about interviewer bias. For example, when you're talking about interviews, you can talk about how unless there's some sort of structure, you're likely to not have consistency in terms of reliability between candidates and so forth. So what can we do to try and increase the reliability and validity? And one of the things we talked about is in terms of validity, for example, the ability to measure if someone's going to be successful if hired, by having a number of selection devices rather than just relying on one or two is going to help you. We also talked about things such as reference checks and background checks and how they're good to have as part of your selection processes, good selection devices. But even they have their problems and limitations as well. So know the various selection devices, the different types of interviews, different types of tests, know what an assessment center is, background checks, reference checks, know a good range of them while coming into the exams. Why would you use these different methods? And what are you going to do to try and maximize reliability and validity in the selection process? Now, a typical question that I ask in exams is to give you a scenario. I might say you are the human resource manager of a mine site in the northwest of Australia, okay? And you're trying to recruit a new truck driver and select a new truck driver. What are some of the selection methods you might use to select a new truck driver in a mine site in the northwest? What would you do to try and ensure that you maximise reliability and validity in this process? Okay, so that's likely to be the way that you'll encounter your exam question again this time, is I'll get you to think of a particular role in an organisation and what might be some of the selection devices you could use to select someone to work in that role in that type of organisation. And asking you to think, you know, what would you do to try and maximize reliability and validity in your selection process? So have the ability to describe the selection process that you would use for a given position in an organization. So we did talk about different types of tests that you can use as part of your selection process, work sample tests, psychometric tests, assessment centers where you bring them together and give them a whole bunch of different types of tests, maybe on the same day or over a couple of days, and there's various other tests as well. So they give you an insight into behaviors. Don't use tests just in isolation. They can be used as a good shortlisting tool as well. So some people for bank tests, for example, might give you a numeracy test to see what your numeracy skills, and might use that as part of the shortlisting process. So make sure you know what reliability and validity is. Reliability is to do with consistency. So is the device that you're using, selection device, consistent and dependable? Would you get the same result from the same person over time if you got them to do the same test at different times? We do have lots and lots of different types of validity that's talked about in the literature. We just talked about two in this unit. We talked about concurrent validity and predictive validity. So concurrent validity is if we're predicting that this device is a valid instrument, if we've got some people that are currently performing well to sit the test, they should perform well. And that would give you concurrent validity. Predictive ability is our ability to predict that someone's going to be successful if hired. And this is quite relevant in selection processes because that's what we're trying to do. We're predicting that if we employ this person, they should be able to perform well on the job. And so then we can have a look at their performance appraisals later and see if it correlates with how we predicted they would perform during the selection interview. And that would give you an indication of predictive validity. So here's some discussion about typical exam questions here on selection. They often get you to think about the selection process. The question often gets you to think about a range of selection devices and what you can do to improve reliability and validity. And as I mentioned, I often get you to think of a particular position in an organisation. Another concept that's coming up in the exam is performance. Okay, so often we will have a performance review or a performance appraisal meeting once or twice a year. My experience has been it's usually once a year. It gives an opportunity to give and receive feedback, two-way communication. So it's a formal meeting, the performance appraisal meeting, but really the whole process of performance management is an ongoing process where you're giving, as a supervisor, you're giving ongoing informal feedback to the person. So when they actually come together in that formal meeting, there's no surprises. Make sure you give constructive feedback, involve them in decision making, be supportive, and show how their contribution makes a contribution to the overall organisation's success. So go into the exam knowing what it is, being able to provide an example and you know what is its relevance to human resource management. Okay, let's talk more specifically about the exam and how it's structured and how you might use your time best in the exam. And I'll give you some more tips of some areas to focus on and what Section A is going to look like and what Section B is going to look like a bit more. So the questions will draw out your knowledge in the major human resource functions and themes related to those. And so some areas of what we've talked about in the unit might not have a specific question, but you might be able to draw it in somehow. Two sections. The exam has got Part A, a short answer section worth 40 marks, and Part B, short essay style answers worth 60 marks. Some questions will be quite specific, some will be broad. Okay, let's have a look at Part A, worth 40 marks. Now, the wording I've got here is the exact wording, just these top two lines here under where it says Part A. That's the exact same wording that's in your exam. Define and discuss the relevance to human resource management of four of the following five concepts. Provide examples or discuss how this would be practically applied. So, for example, occupational health and safety duties of employees and employers. Okay, so you would define what those duties are. So it says define and discuss and you discuss them. And so you'd say, okay, that what are the duties and discuss them and provide examples or how this would be practically applied. So state how you as a human resource manager would make sure that you're maintaining a safe workplace. Similarly, the national employment standards. Provide, you know, define what they are, discuss them, and provide an example or discuss how this would be applied. And you only have to answer four. There'll actually be five in total. So maybe it might be some of the other things that I've given you hints on. So in terms of, I've said here, look, could be any concept covered in the unit, but particularly look at the concepts discussed in this review lecture. And I can let you know now that if I haven't, that all of the areas that are coming up in Part A are areas that I've given you a little bit of overview of in this lecture, in this review lecture. I might not have gone into the depth in this review lecture, though, that I will have done in the main lecture on the topic. So make sure you go back to your textbook, go back to your lecture notes, and make sure that you are able to talk knowledgeably and deeply about the areas that I've given you hints on. The way I'm going to mark them is I'm going to give you 4 marks out of 10 for each of these four areas that are in Part A. I'm going to give you 4 marks for demonstrating to me that you can define it and demonstrate your theoretical understanding. You know what it is. You can define it. Okay, 4 marks. But you'll notice that defining and discussing it is just part of it. You also need to discuss its relevance to human resource management. So if you have a look at those 2 lines underneath where it says Part A 40 marks, it says discuss the relevance to human resource management. So 4 marks for defining, 4 marks for discussing the relevance to human resource management. So practicing doing both. Go into the exam and sort of think, I've got to define it and I've got to discuss the relevance to human resource management. I'm going to give you 4 marks for defining it, 4 marks for discussing the relevance to human resource management. That'll give you 8 marks out of 10 if you can do that well. But then you will get 2 marks for giving me an example or discussing how this would be practically applied. Okay, so think of how you would be able to give an example or discussing how this would be practically applied. So, for example, if the area was indirect discrimination, you could give me an example of someone being told to wear a size 12 costume. That would be an example. And you'd get your 2 marks for that. Maybe the concept might be internal recruitment. And so you could give an example of using a notice board or word of mouth or something like that, and you get your 2 marks for giving the example. So make sure you cover those 3 areas: definition, discussion of the relevance to human resource management, and give an example or show how it's applied to get as many of those 10 marks as possible. Part B. Okay, these 3 points on this slide here, areas Part B, are the areas that are coming up in your exam. You only have to answer 2 questions of a choice of 3. So you can either answer the question on discrimination / equal employment obligations, or you can answer the question on selection devices, which also incorporates reliability and validity, or you can answer the question on job analysis and relating job analysis to the human resource functions. So there's 3 questions in Part B. You have to choose which 2 you're going to answer. Each of those questions is worth 30 marks, which gives you a total of 60 marks. So 60 marks for Part B, 40 marks for Part A. That gives you 100 marks, in total, and then I'll scale your 100 marks back down to a mark out of 40 and add that to the 40 you get for the mark out of 40 you get for your essay and the mark out of 20 you get for your documentation review. So let's just have a look at the timekeeping. This is where some people mess up in the exam because they've spent too much time on section A and not enough time on section B. So I'm just giving you a little bit of guidance of how you might do it. And so the exam is worth 100 marks. There's 2.5 hours. So that gives you 150 minutes. So therefore, each 10 marks is going to give you 15 minutes worth of time. So if you have a look at section A, that's worth 40 marks. So if 10 marks is equal to 1 hour, sorry, 10 marks is worth 15 minutes, 40 marks is going to give you an hour. So you've got 4 questions to answer within the hour. So I reckon if you spend about 15 minutes per question for each of those 4 questions, that'll use up your 1 hour. That's pretty good. So try not to go over your 15 minutes in answering each of the 4 questions in section A. However, in section B, you've got 60 marks. So really, you should be spending about 1.5 hours on section B. You've only got to answer 2 of the 3 questions. So that's about 45 minutes per question. So if you spent 45 minutes on each one, you should be able to give that a pretty good go and maximise your 30 marks for each question. You might want to play around with the timing a little bit if you're the sort of person that likes to reread your work or whatever. So remember, timing is everything. Try not to run out of time in the exam. Manage your time in line with the marks allocated, as I've suggested. Make sure you answer the question that has been asked, not the question you wanted me to ask you. So do have a very close read of the exam question and make sure you've answered that question. Look, I understand that we don't do a lot of writing by hand. Most of what we do nowadays is typing, but in the exam setting, we are required to write using a pen and paper, so do your best to write legibly. I've got terrible handwriting, as you probably know, but just remember that I've got to work out what you're saying there. I find it easier to see what you're saying to me if you use headings, dot points, maybe even highlight a pen or different colour or underline something, things that you really want to jump out at me. Feel free to do what you think is necessary for really important points to really jump out and grab my attention as I come through to mark it. And if you know the authors or theories, people who have written certain theories, feel free to acknowledge their ideas. You don't have to do referencing like you would do normally for an essay. Look, I reckon a little bit of nerves in an exam can help us to perform well, but also just go into the exam knowing that you've done everything that you possibly can up to that point, and so relax. Hopefully the tips that I've given you will help you focus your study, and I do wish you the very best of success in your exams, and it's been my pleasure to have you in the unit, and I hope to see you again. So good luck, and enjoy your break after the exams. And if you've got any questions in your preparation, please feel free to get in touch. God bless.